Our scripture this morning is taken from the 8th chapter of Mark, 31st through the 38th verses. Then he began to teach them that the Son of Man must undergo great suffering and be rejected by the elders, the chief priests, and the scribes, and be killed, and after 3 days rise again. He said all this quite openly, and Peter took him aside and began to rebuke him. But turning and looking at his disciples, he rebuked Peter and said, "Get behind me, Satan, for you are setting your mind not on divine things, but on human things." He called the crowd with his disciples and said to them, "If you want to become my followers, let them deny themselves and take up their cross and follow me. For those who want to save their life will lose it, and those who lose their life for my sake, for the sake of the gospel, shall save it. For what will it profit them to gain the whole world and forfeit their life? Indeed, what can they give in return for their life? Those who are ashamed of me and my words in this adulterous and sinful generation, of them the Son of Man will also be ashamed when he comes in the glory of his Father with the holy angels." So ends the reading of the word of the Lord.
I think we live in really interesting times in that we can choose the story we hear. I mean, we have millions of entertainment options, movies and TV shows and books and plays. And so imagine you're sitting down with your family Friday or Saturday night, the popcorn is popping, and you're choosing a movie to watch. And you say, what do we want to watch? A comedy, a romance, and action, a mystery. I mean, we have these choices. I mean, it seems like in the Stone Age, they didn't say, we don't want to hear the Great Hunt story anymore. Tell us the one about how you met your wife. It's a different kind of time we live in. We choose our story. And maybe this happens to you. You start to watch a movie or you start to read a book and you get a little ways into it and you think, I don't like this story. You ever have that? I started to watch an Italian movie. I thought it'd be real cultured, and I was going to watch an Italian movie a few years ago. And it was about this couple that they had financial problems, and then they had relationship problems, and everything in their life was falling apart. And I thought, if I'm going to watch a movie about Italy, I want sunshine and happiness and pasta and passionate people and all this, not all this misery and depressing stuff. So I stopped watching it. I watched something else. In my younger days, I used to go to the movies a lot, and I bet it was 15 years ago, and it was a Saturday afternoon, and it was in my carefree bachelor days, and didn't have anything to do, so I said, well, I'll go to the movies, and so I went to a theater that had 12 screens and had plenty of choices, and I said, I'm going to see the scary movie. Now, I used to like scary movies. I grew up on the campy horror movies of the 80s, and there's sort of a nostalgia that I have for some of that, and I used to like them. I don't know why now, but I used to like them, and I thought, well, okay, I'll see the scary movie. And so I'm sitting in the theater, and it wasn't the jump out and scare you kind of scary movie, but there was just this nagging sense of dread and unease was just building through the movie, and just the sense that something awful was at loose in the world. And so this went on for about an hour or so. And after an hour, I thought, life is scary enough. I thought, I don't need this movie to add to it. I mean, you know, there are enough. I mean, we live in fear, don't we? Of disease, you know, or financial collapse, or personal failure, or lurking violence. I mean, all these things are looming out there for us, and you can get pretty afraid if you want to. And I thought, there's just enough of that in the real world. I don't need this movie adding to it. So I got up and left. I thought, I don't have to stay here. Nobody's keeping me here. So I thought to myself, I don't like this story. So I have some sympathy here for Peter. Peter says to Jesus, I don't like this story. And he does something about it. Peter, in fact, he tries to kind of shush Jesus. It says, then he began to teach them that the Son of Man must undergo many things and be rejected by the elders, the chief priests, the scribes, and be killed, and after 3 days rise again. He said this quite openly. So a number of years ago, I was at a wedding and was at the reception, and I was seated at this table with people I had not met before and making polite conversation. You know how it is with people you met. And so a safe thing to ask is, where are you from? And there was this couple, husband and wife. I said, where are you from? They said, oh, we live near Seattle. And I said, oh, yeah. I said, I've been to Seattle a couple of times. I said, where at? And they said, Redmond. And I said, oh, you know, I said, I've never been to Redmond, but I know of it. And then I said, isn't that where Microsoft is located? And they said, well, yes, it is. And you know how it is where you sense maybe there's more to the story there, that people aren't given the full story. And so I said, after a pause, I said, well, do you work for Microsoft? And they said, well, yes, we do. I was just making conversation, and at that time, Bill Gates, the CEO at the time of Microsoft, was the richest man in the world. And I said, well, I said, do you ever see Bill Gates around? Do you ever pass him in the hallway or see him going from building to building? And the woman, the wife, she said, yeah. She said, we do. And she said, yeah, I'm kind of famous because I shushed Bill Gates. And so she went on to tell the story. She said, we had this meeting, and there was 20 or so people there, and Bill Gates was there. And she was presenting something, some project that they had and that she was a part of, and Bill Gates is kind of quietly chatting with the person who's sitting next to him. Now, you know how it is if you're talking before a group and there's a couple people who are talking. If there were two of you having a conversation now, it would be really distracting. It's just hard to do, and it's you, everybody, you act like you're ignoring them even though you're not. And so here Bill Gates and this other are kind of quietly chatting away, and she had a hard time with it. And so she said she eventually did that to Bill Gates. She shushed him. And I thought, well, that's a bold move. Not only for your boss, but for the richest person in the world to tell him to be quiet. Well, that's what Peter does here. Jesus starts talking about being rejected and suffering and dying. And Peter thinks, I don't like this movie at all. I don't like the sound of this at all. And so he shushes Jesus. And the word that our Bible uses is rebukes. You know, he takes Jesus aside here this way. And the Greek word is literally that he judged it to be of no value. It's the same word that Jesus, when Jesus drives out a demon, or the same word that when Jesus calms the storm, he rebukes the storm. It's basically, so what he's saying is, we've got no place for you at all here, move along. And so what Peter is doing to Jesus is, and I imagine him wagging his fingers, he's doing it, he's basically saying, nope, Jesus, this is not how the story is going to go. You better change how you're talking right now. I don't like this one bit. Now, don't be too hard on Peter, because I don't think really I'm any different from Peter. You're probably in your heart, probably not either. The Jesus of the cross, I mean, when you think about it, it goes against all of our inclinations. I mean, because we like a winner. We like the Jesus who's sort of a, you know, like the action hero star, you know, the overcomer, the one who achieves and wins. But the stuff about suffering and rejection. rejection and death. I mean, there's a part of me that says, I don't like this story, Jesus. But maybe when we do that, when we're in our heart of hearts, when we do that, maybe we forget who Jesus is, and maybe we forget that Jesus came to teach us a different story. Do you remember from the Winnie the Pooh stories the character Eeyore? Do you remember Eeyore? Did Eeyore have a good attitude or a bad attitude about things? You know the answer is bad. In one of the stories, I think Eeyore has lost his tail, and they're trying to create a contest to get a new tail for Eeyore and trying to pick out what the prize would be for that. And he says, well, I'd say thistles, but nobody listens to me anyway. And so he's given a tail, which was actually a balloon here, and he says, sure, it's a cheerful color. Guess I'll have to get used to it. And then Kanga finds another tail for him, and he says, it's an awful nice tail, Kanga, much nicer than the rest of me. And another story, Winnie the Pooh meets Eeyore and tells him it's a lovely day. And Eeyore responds, wish I could say yes, but I can't. Now, have you ever met anyone like Eeyore that's got a little bit of Eeyore? And there was a guy I knew that he knew I would listen to him, and so he liked to tell me about his problems. And eventually I got to the point where I said, okay, I'll listen to all your problems, but first, before you tell me anything, tell me one good thing. But when you meet someone like that, don't you, you think, okay, you've got to change your story. You've got to change your attitude. You're stuck in the story where you only see the very worst. Now, it's sort of similar what Jesus is doing with Peter. He's saying, okay, Peter, you've got to change your story. Because Peter has this idea that when the Messiah comes, there will be no more suffering. The story in Peter's head is, okay, the Messiah comes and the Messiah will make everything easy. No suffering, only triumph, that the Messiah will be the conquering king to take us all to Easy Street. And here Jesus is saying no. He says, don't you see that I follow this path that involves suffering and rejection and death, and I will rise again, but this is the path that I'm following. It says that when Peter tries to shush Jesus, that Jesus in turn rebukes Peter. The counter-rebuke judges what Peter is saying to be of no account. And Jesus saying, no, you've got to understand that this is what I'm doing. And he says, it'll be the same for those who follow me too, that those who follow me, that they too must take up their cross and follow me. He's changing Peter's story. I forget this. I do. I've been hanging around church my whole life, and I've been a pastor for a number of years, and still I forget who Jesus is. I start to think that Jesus came to make my life easy. Do you ever think that way? That Jesus' purpose was to come and to make my life easy? Do you remember Staples, the office supply company? They had that commercial with the easy button. Do you remember that? And this commercial, well, wouldn't it be wonderful? You hit this button and made everything easy. And sometimes I start to think Jesus came to give me an easy button. Do you ever start to think that way? Things are hard and I'm not very comfortable with it. And I think, Jesus, just make it easy. Or maybe people are not so nice to me because I think I'm doing the right thing. And I think, Jesus, can't you just make this easy? Or the wrong thing seems so easy and seems so simple. I think, oh, can it just be easy here, Jesus? Our relationships or health or whatever it is hard. And I think, Jesus, just can't you just make it easy? Can't you give me that easy button? But Jesus says no. He says, I came among you as a human, not easy. Jesus says, I chose to love you when you weren't so lovable, not easy. I chose to meet you in the midst of the hardness of this world, not easy. I chose to go to you in the midst of the mess of this world and to pull you out of it, not easy. I chose to meet you in the place where you were farthest away from me in sin and death, and to meet you there and to die in that place to pull you out of all of that, not easy. That's a different story than what we're used to, isn't it? What Jesus does, the story that Jesus lives, but it's a story that changes things. It's a story that brings life. And Jesus says, okay, that's a story that changes you too, because you were called to suffer too in the path of sharing life. Charles Cusar says, to be grasped by Christ is to discover a whole new world where standards of success, once dearly held, no longer matter, where criteria of success, once dearly held, no longer matter, where criteria for decisions are radically altered, where people are held in a different light. Basically, what he's saying is, to be caught up in Jesus' story is to completely change the story that we're living. And the story that Jesus lives and calls us to is a story we need to hear again and again. And it seems to me that's why you're here. That's why we gather here on a Sunday morning, to worship and to hear the story again. And we do when we're here together. We see the cross lifted high above us, just as we sang about at the beginning, to bring us back again to Jesus' story. We share in communion again, and we're brought back again to who Jesus is and to his story. Here in the season of Lent, as we journey with Jesus to the cross, we're brought back again to Jesus' story. You see, sisters and brothers, Jesus tells us here a different, a better story. He lives, he shares, and he calls us to his different, better story. Amen.